Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. And if you're new here, which I believe many of you are recently, it's great to have you. This is Hack the Entrepreneur, and we've interviewed almost 450 different entrepreneurs where we try and get to the bottom of their mindset, not tactics, but how they think, how they act, how they work. But why is it called Hack the Entrepreneur? Because we have the conversation, the interview, and then after it, we pull out the hack. Make sure to stick around after the interview to find out what the hack is today. And we've got a great show for you today, so let's get right into it. My guest today finished college in 1992, and just over 1 year later, he started his first company. During the next decade, he started companies in real estate and ice cream. That might not make sense on the surface, but when you hear about how he thinks about finding gaps in marketplaces and where he decides to take action, it will make perfect sense. So in 2009, he founded Green Man Cannabis, just one day after Colorado legalized the production and sale of medical and recreational cannabis. And what began as a 5,000 square foot growing operation has scaled to 130,000 square feet of production today. Late 2017, he founded One Cannabis. It's a franchisor for retail marijuana stores around the US and Canada. Now, let's hack. Chris Hegeseth. No matter what business or market you're in, there are two things businesses need to succeed. One, they need to satisfy a real need. And two, they need to be able to reach the right audience at the right time and then connect with them with a message that will resonate the most. So if you want to target your customers where they are every single day and when they're ready to make a decision, LinkedIn can help you. LinkedIn has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, right down to their job title, their company name, and their industry. Because better targeting equals a message your customers care about, this leads to more trust with potential customers. And to prove to you just how effective this is, I've got you a special no-brainer offer. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit, go to linkedin.com/hack. That's linkedin.com/hack, and you're going to get a free $100 ad credit. Terms and conditions apply, but remember, this is $100 of free advertising for you. Seriously, take advantage of this. linkedin.com/hack for your $100 ad credit. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. You are about guest number 440, and you're the first cannabis entrepreneur I've had. And we'll see if this opens up the floodgates for more, but I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting insight, you bet.
Yeah, so let's jump into it.
Yeah, okay.
Let's start here, Christian. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I guess it's going to give us a turn right off the beginning, and it might be a strange thing for an entrepreneur to say, but I really believe I meditate. I pray and meditate every morning, and in that, I look for inspiration and not just to be guided by what I think is important, but try to reach deeper or higher, depending on how you look at it. But I meditate every day, every morning before work, and make sure that I'm centered and grounded on what's important.
Wow. This is cool. Yeah. How long have you been doing this for?
All my life. Right after I was confirmed in the Presbyterian Church as a kid, the youngest, and my dad said, hey, I've got a path that I want to follow. And he started going to the Quakers, their religious society of friends who met in a silent meeting. And so when I was 14, meditation really became part of a a religious practice for me with the Quakers. And then that wore off over a few years that the Quakers did, but I always continued to meditate. So I guess I've been doing it for, you know, 35 years now.
Wow. So it's a spiritual practice, but also like a mindfulness one.
It is. Yeah, it's very a lot of mindfulness. You know, I think that, you know, to clarify why I mean this for entrepreneurship is that sometimes we get caught in our heads. We get caught in the next great idea or what should I say or what should I do? And we get separated from the inspiration, the pure idea that brought us to doing what we're doing. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, I've been a lifelong entrepreneur. Cannabis is the fourth industry I've started a business in. And, you know, I think that having that, staying true to that inspiration, that guiding principle, that thing that was so meaningful to you that caused you to get into it in the beginning is really important. And so I've found that I maintain that connection through daily meditation.
I like it. I like it. And I mean, I guess it seems like the mindfulness and that sort of aspect of it, it fits with now where you are, I would think. Like it's not completely incongruent with the cannabis business, I would think, and or at least on the customer side of the things.
Yeah, absolutely. There's an openness to a more liberal and open attitude to a perception anyway of most cannabis consumers.
Exactly. So yeah. If we go back to you being a lifelong entrepreneur, right before we started, you were telling me about went to college and then right after that you started a business.
Yeah.
Can you just sort of go through that, I guess, fairly briefly and let's just see where you started.
Sure. So I went to University of Arizona and Arizona State University. I graduated in 92 and then immediately moved up to Seattle, Washington. And when I got to Seattle, I took a job for a year. You know, I was a recent college graduate and had my degree in hand and was looking for that professional experience. So I went to work for somebody who would, you know, make me wear a tie and pay me $30,000 a year, which felt like a huge accomplishment at the time. But then I realized that it just wasn't me. That again, my truth is that I'm a very creative and passionate person, and that sort of just that corporate job was very, very unfulfilling. And so I started an ice cream company up in Seattle called Marble Top Creamery. And I had, again, going to school in Arizona, I had just seen the beginnings of Marble Slab Creamery down there, and they really with their first unit, and I think they have 700 units or something around the United States. So when I got up to Seattle, I said I saw a void in the market for this unique service, this mix-in concept of ice cream. It didn't exist up in the Northwest at that time. Together with a partner from Arizona State, we took the idea and made it reality. And we started a little company called Marble Top Creamery. Eventually, we grew it into three retail units and a small manufacturing facility and then sold it off.
Can you explain, I guess, this, like you saw a void in the market?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, you know, it's like there was ice cream in it. I'll use the ice cream analogy to discuss that void. But at the time, you had 31 flavors or maybe something like TCBY, right? So you either had the hard scoop ice cream or you had the soft serve yogurt place. Well, the void that we saw was this mix-in concept where they took the hard serve ice cream and then spread it across a cold stone. And then you could take all these different toppings or mix-ins, you know, candy bars or chocolate chips or peanut butter or whatever it might be. And we would, you know, physically mix it into the ice cream and then serve it up. And so it was an experience that really brought customers in. So it was a different product slightly. It was still ice cream combined with toppings, but the experience of how the consumer got to select what their flavor of ice cream was and to see it made in front of them really differentiated it from things that were happening in that market at that time. And similarly, I think, you know, later you look down, you see Pinkberry came along and just sort of took that whole frozen yogurt concept a little further. And then just last week, I saw at the International Franchise Expo in New York and saw a fully automated kiosk that has two flavors of ice cream and four toppings and can combine them in any way, but it's fully automated. It doesn't require any human involvement. So there was a pattern of, hey, first there was hard serve ice cream that you scooped, and then we had soft serve yogurt, which was a fad for a moment. Then there was this mix-in concept, which did something. And then, you know, it's sort of a progression of product and, you know, service that change. And so when we saw that, we got the Seattle, it was just, you see something that in Arizona was a huge hit. I mean, this Marble Slab, when it started, they used to have a band play in front of the ice cream store at night to entertain the line, because the line was often over an hour.
Well, so. I mean, it's a great analogy, right? It's ice cream, but I mean, really any market is like this.
Any market.
Yeah. And it's so keenly insightful. Like I'm wondering, Did you have that insight of this void, like when you were starting this, or is it sort of looking back on it now? It's like, that's how we did it.
No, it was definitely the latter. I mean, I think I've always seen that I just don't see what is, but I also tend to see what's missing. It's not just, oh, there's a lot of interesting service offerings out there, or, you know, look how these guys are differentiating, but wow, everyone's going this direction, but somebody's missing this. So no, even then I saw it as a void that had a potential, that, you know, the potential to really turn into a market.
And being an entrepreneur at this point for the first time in your life, did you also see this as sort of like the fork in the road where this is now the direction your life is going?
I did. And candidly, I don't think I really saw it as a fork. There was no other option for me. My life took a fateful turn, and it's like one day I'm like, I'm going to do this forever. I love entrepreneurship. I've often said, and I wrote a book on the marijuana industry called Big Weed, and I put it in there, this analogy that I'm not an artist in the traditional sense. I don't paint, I don't dance, I don't sing, thank God for you. But my creative expression into the world is entrepreneurship. And it really is. It starts with an idea, an epiphany, an aha moment, you know, however, you know, inspiration, however we want to, whatever term it is. And then you say, gosh, I can do this. I can take this idea and turn it into something in the world. I can make it a product or a service. And then you start to communicate this idea to other people and engage them in the concept and bring the resources together, the people, the money, the place, the raw materials to create this product or service. And then you do it. And to me, that's my creative expression. That's the part that I just love. And so as soon as I started doing that back with Marble Top Creamery, I knew that this was a path that I would have to, you know, it's like, imagine painting for the first time and you find out that you love painting, that it like fills something in your heart. You're like, I'm going to paint for the rest of my life. I'm not going to do this once and walk away. So that's how I felt about entrepreneurship the first time I touched it.
Yeah. And I love this idea and this sort of mindset of thinking of entrepreneurship as a creative endeavor, because it absolutely is. And to me, it also, like, it allows you or enables you to be able to bring sort of your passion to almost any market, because the passion is the entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily ice cream or weed, maybe, but you know what I mean? Like, has that been a way that you've been able to evolve, like, through the different businesses, or has it been literally, I'm passionate about ice cream, I'm passionate about weed, let's
go? No, I'm passionate about again, identifying a need in the market and being able to work to do something. I was ice cream, technology, real estate, finance, and now cannabis. And so very, very different markets. But
you're in the weed business now. And right before, I didn't know this about you I didn't mean to interrupt you, but because I love this sort of ice cream to finance, I mean, real estate, weed is now, or cannabis, I guess is the legal term about it, but we're still new with it up here in Canada. So you have to bear with me. But the idea of Green Man Cannabis in Colorado, 2 dispensaries, I believe, super successful, but you got licensed or started like a day or two after it was literally made legal.
Yeah. In July of 2009, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment held a public meeting where they made a watershed decision. And a decision was if a caregiver, somebody growing cannabis for somebody else, could have 5 patients or more. And if you could only have up to 5 patients, it really meant that people were going to still be growing in their basements for maybe a few neighbors. But if you could have more than 5 patients, then it was really about to become an industry. And they obviously decided that a caregiver could have more than 5 patients. The next day I went out and started signing up every friend I knew that would like the idea of having, you know, access to medical marijuana. And it wasn't long before we'd signed up almost 600 people. And each one of those allowed us to grow 6 plants for them. And so that was July. And so by September, we were in our first building, a 5,000-foot warehouse in Denver, and started growing and put plants in the ground in October. And I have been growing marijuana every day since. And so it's obviously grown quite a bit since then. Back then, we had 5,000 square feet to start. Now we have a little over 130,000 square feet, which is almost 3 acres. Inside. And yeah, you know, it's changed a lot. I've been a partner in 5 marijuana dispensaries in Colorado. We still do currently have 2, but I've also worked in 9 states around the United States and in Israel. I've been to Canada a number of times, but never actually engaged in any work up there, just visiting with colleagues around industry issues. Mm-hmm. So I've done a lot with in the cannabis world in the last 9 years.
I love it. So you said 2009 was this watershed decision?
Yep.
So at the time, so I mean, say leading up to it, 6 months or a year, like what were you up to that put you in this position to just take serious action when it needed to be taken?
I was in one of the toughest positions for an entrepreneur, but also I think one that has consistently amongst so many people created the greatest opportunity. And that is in 08, I was going very long in the real estate and finance world. And 08 recession hit, it absolutely crippled me. And it's what I call a shattering. And a shattering is when you're going about life and everything you know gets completely blown apart for whatever reason. And in this case, it was a sort of a macroeconomic event. And sometimes it might be a major creditor default, or in other cases, a divorce or a partnership breakup can cause it. But there's a number of things that can cause a shattering, both on a personal and professional level. And at this point, it was professionally, I was heavily invested in real estate all across the United States. And when the markets retracted, I was screwed. So I was left going long financially when I should have been gone short. And so in 09, I was an investor and an entrepreneur really looking for something to do. I had cleaned up a mess of real estate and had time and money on my hands. And I knew I needed to get into something. And one day my good friend and attorney invited me to go play golf. And another guy he had invited into our foursome, I was just about to open a dispensary. And over the course of 18 holes, that guy and I rode together in a cart and talked about the business of marijuana and marijuana as a product and where it might go. And he and I ended up consulting with him for about 6 weeks before I got into the industry. So it was just a fortunate series of events. But that fortunate series of events started with a very unfortunate event that shattered my entire professional life. Here I am, after the shattering, really like dying to get involved in something, missing both professional success and making money and creating something we're all missing from my life. So when cannabis came around, it definitely was the right time for me. Had it been a year earlier, I was just too busy in the world of real estate and I might have missed it. A year later, and I'd probably be engaged in something else. So the timing of cannabis, full legalization in Colorado and where I was in my professional cycle just matched up.
There's a lot of luck involved in
starting
a book. And it's usually around that timing, right? I mean, it's true. If any of us started a year or two, three, 4 years after or before, things are just so different. Mm-hmm. But also in that timing, right? I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that are in that sort of year you had where you're looking for something. Mm-hmm. The hard part is often not saying yes to the wrong things first. Mm. I can't imagine that you, in what you'd already accomplished, that cannabis was your very first idea that was brought to you and you were like, yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
There must have been some terrible ideas you turned down.
Yeah.
Well, that seemed terrible now.
You're wise, my friend. You're wise. It's true, because I was looking. And so you see these things, you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. I had a background in technology as well. And so we're looking at a couple of different tech ideas that we might launch. And this is a very turbulent time in the global economy, 08 and 09. And things were really kind of all on their head. And it was hard to see which way things were going to come out. And so some of the things I looked at were sort of hopeful in a sense. You're like, well, if things turn around, this will be a great idea. And so I was searching for some different things, and I had invested some of myself into a couple of different projects, and we're trying to see which one offered the most hope and what I could really take to fruition. But cannabis was certainly not the only thing that was offered to me, for your insight. It was very much just the one that I ended up choosing, again, because of some timing and different things.
Right. And then there was, to quote Wayne Gretzky, as I'm a Canadian, you could see where the puck was going, which was, here's this opportunity that's going to be massive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just grabbed it before anybody even really realized, for the most part, what was about to happen. You were like, there it is. In a year from now, this is going to be massive and I want to be there.
I tell you what, it's funny. You talk about that. And I did. I grabbed onto something thinking this is going to be massive. And for the next 3 or 4 years, I had everyone around me candidly just saying, well, what are you doing, dude? This is killing you. The market isn't there. I was way ahead of my time. You and I were talking about this before the show of like the value of your podcast. It's like, here we are in 2018 and the internet's well established and you are 440 or so segments into this. Congratulations, by the way. That's a feat.
Thank you.
And so you've done 440 of these, and I looked at that body of work that you've created and said, as an entrepreneur, I wish I had this as a resource when I started as an entrepreneur back in the early 90s. And it would have been a great resource for me. And maybe a guy like you could have made it, right? And, the internet was as nascent as the marijuana industry is today. And there were very few, there probably weren't a lot of consumers for the product. So if you started doing the Hack the Entrepreneur podcast in 95, mm-hmm. right, versus 2015, what year did you start?
I started 2005. No, 2015. Sorry, 2015.
Yeah, 2015. So you'd started 20 years before. Again, great concept, great delivery, but the market just wasn't there. The internet, the backbone wasn't there. They didn't have enough listenership. And that's what cannabis has been over the last 9 years. Great idea, a lot of promise, but not a mature market. A lot of troubles with regulation, a lot of troubles with just trying to get product out and distributed, not a lot of market. And what the market's going to be in 5 years, what I did 9 years ago is going to look genius in another 5 years. But, a couple of years after I got started, it was very, very difficult. And I think that's true for almost all entrepreneurial efforts. I'm sure you and I could exchange stories about what your first year looked like compared to what your last year looked like and, how the market is sort of, it rises to meet you if you have a valuable product or service. But it was tough in the beginning.
Absolutely true. And you're right, because it was only Colorado and it was just starting. And I mean, now it's spreading across the country, obviously, and across other countries. But at the time, it wasn't. Which is interesting, though, Christian, because this sort of takes us to now with like your new venture mm-hmm. started in the last year. And to me, it's almost like you're seeing where it's going again. And you're now sort of leaping off of where you are to kind of meet the next big wave, right? Which is really going out, spreading out far from like obviously Colorado and where you've even been. So this is where we kind of like to talk about projects. This is obviously a massive project because it's actually a whole company you're starting. Mm-hmm. But I would love to know, we talked about what went through your head and the decision-making earlier on getting into this. But now with a successful business going, what is the process that you go through like to decide that this new project, new business is totally worth yours, your team's time, energy, and resources?
So I would love to tell you that like I had such foresight and strategy and I knew the market and could read the tea leaves, but it wasn't that. It was a process of trial and error. Whatever I do, I try to do very well. And so I've been operating in cannabis again for the last 9 years, constantly growing, working in other states, working in other countries, and trying to find those next sort of fit the pieces together of how do we grow this? When I say grow it again, I'm talking about really from this sort of creative fulfillment way. I mean, it's not just always about growing revenue and making money. I think it's very important in a business to be making money, obviously, and support your life and be able to pay your employees and do all that good stuff. But growing was really about, who do we evolve into in this industry? Because we got good at operating dispensaries and grow facilities. In fact, we've won 6 cannabis cups for the product that we grow. The cannabis cup is the highest award for product excellence in the marijuana industry. We've won that 6 times, one of the most award-winning growers in the U.S. And last year, we were named one of the best dispensaries in the United States by High Times magazine. And so, a lot of confirmation. We were compliant. We were profitable. We were winning awards. We had built a good company and building a good brand. And so a number of times we looked and said, where can we go from here? We looked at partnering with people in different states. Did some medical research in Israel to look at sort of nutraceutical and pharmacological applications for cannabis, but really looked at a lot of things. And what we ended up seeing is, what we have a lot of expertise in is we know how to operate compliant and profitable marijuana companies. And there's a lot of people as Canada just fully nationally legalized last Thursday, first industrialized nation in the world to do so. And of course, the United States has, 29 states now, 8 of them with recreational laws. And so there's this massive growth of new entrants getting into the cannabis space. And so we said, what we're really good at is operating. Not only can we operate for ourselves, but we can help other people to operate as well. And so we turned ourselves into a franchisor, by which we support franchisees through a license agreement where they pay us some upfront money and their percentage of revenue. And we help them to do everything around operating the cannabis business to really use all of the expertise that we've developed over the last 9 years and, what it takes with cannabis to be successful. And we license that out through franchise agreements to help people operate both retail outlets and cultivation facilities around the country. And so we already sold franchises in Colorado, Ohio, Michigan, California, working on some stuff in Nevada, and looking at a license agreement to actually sell to one of the public LPs up in Canada. We're talking with them about basically taking our franchise concept for all, the entire country of Canada.
Wow. Are you a co-founder in, I believe it's One Cannabis, right?
Yeah, I am. I guess technically I'm a co-founder. I'm the founder. I'm the driving visionary behind it. But as a visionary and an entrepreneur, there's very, very little I ever do alone. It's all team. So with the franchise company, I have a franchise partner who's a 20-year veteran of the franchise industry. He's an attorney who was also CEO of a franchise that sold a few years ago. And he was looking to do it again. And so he brought his expertise on franchising, and I have my expertise on cannabis. And we partnered with one of my operating companies. And that company has a whole team of people who are really the operators. You know, I believe everyone there on the day we start a company is a founder and is deserving of that title. But I drive a lot of the vision. You know, we founded a franchise company because I saw a need for it. And then we enrolled a team and everyone is a co-founder. That was the big one.
Yeah, it's a great way to do it, especially bringing in people with the different skill sets that are necessary to drive this forward.
Yeah.
So with a company and it being so young and again in a new sort of industry, are you guys doing like outbound sort of marketing to get your customers, or how is it you're going about this?
I've been doing this a long time. So the outbound marketing we're doing are through the professional services, the attorneys primarily and accountants to a lesser degree that are working with new entrants into the industry or existing clients. And so, you know, by really informing and there's only a handful of these firms that handle it, just, you know, talking to them and making sure that they understand our value proposition and how we can help their clients to be successful. That's really the only marketing we've done at this point. We're in a fortunate situation that it's only us and three others in the country, in the U.S. right now. And I think just two recently added for Canada. But I think we're the only ones to actually have sold any franchises. And so we don't have a lot of competition. If you look up, you know, trying to look up information on franchising in the cannabis industry, we're one of the very few choices. Wow. So it's easier to differentiate when there's not many to differentiate from.
Exactly. And you're at the forefront again, which is pushing forward to the future. Mm-hmm. And I've absolutely enjoyed this conversation, Christian. But with that, I want to segue into the final question, if we could.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's this idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap, right? So as we push forward to the future, and as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, as creators of these things, it seems like we're always pushing our own successes into the future by setting goals, right? So in 3 months, when Cannabis One hits this metric, in 6 months, when it hits that next metric, whatever that happens to be, you and I both know you're going to set bigger, loftier ones into the future right as you hit those ones.
Yeah.
Which is great, but I would love it, rather than looking forward for a couple of minutes here, Christian, I would love it if you could stop and turn around and look behind you. It's been a great sort of run so far since, I mean, graduating poli sci and starting your first business in ice cream. But the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses. Can you just tell me how this whole journey feels until today?
All from my journey of entrepreneurship, not just within cannabis, but the whole thing.
The whole thing.
It feels like is I fear living a vanilla life. I fear that I wake up towards the end of my life and I realize I haven't lived. There's that expression that on your deathbed, you'll never regret the things you did. You'll just regret the chances you didn't take. And for me, that's been a driving force in my life. And because of that, I look back on my career as an entrepreneur. I absolutely love it because it gives me the texture of life. And the texture of life is not always winning. It's not always being loved. It's not having every idea accepted and approved and profitable. You know, that texture of life is trying hard, swinging the bat, falling down, picking yourself up, dusting yourself off, doing it again. You do that 100 times until you finally figure it out. And then you start to connect. You know, to me, that there's so much joy in that. And again, the texture of life, the, you know, that I'm not living this, I will not, I don't, if my life were to end today, I would be grateful for the opportunities I've had to express myself and to win and lose with a team of people and to connect with folks and to, you know, take ideas and turn them into reality. And it certainly doesn't mean it's always worked. It's, you know, it's probably the opposite. And I probably, what is it in baseball? They say that, you know, often the guy that hits the most home runs also strikes out the most. Mm-hmm. He's taken the most swings. And there's some truth in that, you know? And so that's what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that I feel fulfilled in my life, that I've had the opportunity to create and to win through my creation and to lose and to learn as much about myself from my losses as my wins. So that's what I'm really profoundly grateful for, you know, because I've got, as we all do, I've got a handful of friends from throughout life. And, you know, some of them are those, you know, one in particular, you know, he got into finance and he's been, you know, really successful and makes good money. But, you know, talking with him about his satisfaction in life, he's just not fulfilled. It's like, hey, listen, the money's great. And I got a nice house and I've got things and my retirement's fine. But I mean, the guy just, he doesn't like work. For me, I wake up on a Monday morning early because I'm excited. That's what I'm really grateful for.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. All right, Christian, we've talked about the businesses throughout the conversation, but One Cannabis, can you tell the listener who it's for and what it can do for them?
Yeah. So One Cannabis will soon be the premier brand of retail marijuana in the country, in the United States, and hopefully then Canada, and will grow as it grows around the world. We are currently the leading franchisor of retail cannabis operations. And now we're also taking a company public in the US and Canada that we'll use to go out and buy existing companies. So people can look to One Cannabis to be a reliable provider of high quality, ethically grown product for sale near them soon. And then in addition that we are franchising the concept so the people that are interested to be business owners and entrepreneurs themselves and operate within the cannabis space, there's a franchise opportunity that goes with that.
Very cool. One-cannabis.com is the site.
Yes.
And if you're in Denver or around Denver, I guess Green Man Cannabis is the place.
Yeah, Green Man Cannabis. So we're about to open our first One Cannabis store here in just a couple of months. So we're pretty excited.
Very, very cool. All right, Christian, I'll link to both those in the show notes and then the book as well that was mentioned. And anything else we mentioned throughout here, I'll add those in the show notes for you.
Cool.
Later. So, Christian, once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. I really, truly do appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
Thanks, John. Hey, you too, man. Keep up the amazing work with Hack the Entrepreneur. That's 440 episodes. That's a significant accomplishment. So good on you.
That was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Christian is the very first cannabis entrepreneur I've had on the show, and the way the industry is going, way legalization, I guess, is going, he might not be the last one either. All right, so in the introduction to the show, I told you about the hack and how we find it. So we've been through the conversation. Now it's time to go back. This is where I go back and I listen to the conversation 1, 2, 3 times, whatever it takes, to find that one thing that Christian said. I found it. Have you found it? All right, let's go back. Are you ready? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I'm not an artist in the traditional sense. I don't paint. I don't dance. I don't sing. Thank God for you. But my creative expression into the world is entrepreneurship. And it really is. It starts with an idea, an epiphany, an aha moment, you know, however, you know, inspiration, however we want to, whatever term it is. And then you say, gosh, I can do this. I can take this idea and turn it into something in the world. I can make it a product or a service.
And that's the hack. Christian, Christian, Christian. You've spoke to me. I love this. Entrepreneurship, the creation of something out of nothing as an artistic endeavor, as an artistic expression. This is how to think about business. This is how to think about entrepreneurship. The creation of something out of nothing. The creation of an art form. It's literally that. This this is your canvas to paint on. This is your blank page to write on. And when we begin to see creating a business, creating a product, creating a service as an artistic endeavor, I believe it really empowers us and frees us up to create exactly how we feel or we see the market needs it. Not how it's been done before, and it doesn't have to be created completely from scratch. Most art is not created from scratch. Art evolves and sort of grows and builds off of art before it. Your products, your services, your ideas, your businesses, your management style, your hiring processes, all of it should grow and build and evolve off of what has come before. Christian most recently is working in a very fast-moving, very, very new market of cannabis production and sale. But he also worked in real estate. He also worked in selling ice cream. This doesn't have to be just for apps or companies that are changing the way their marketplace works. That's not how it is. You can think of maybe the most boring, I would say, accounting or something. But think of it as an artistic endeavor. Be creative, put your heart and soul into it, and create something that educates, entertains, or inspires your potential audience. And you'll create a business that you enjoy, and you'll create a business that is successful. Christian, thank you so very, very much. All right, well, I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fun. Now it's your turn. How about a rating and a review? Rating or a review? If you're on Apple Podcasts, if you're on Google Play, if you're on Spotify, like it, thumb up it, leave a rating, leave a review, whatever it is you are doing or can do on that device that you are on right now. It'll take you 60 seconds, 90 seconds, something like that, and it will help me and it will help the show so very, very, very much to continue to grow, to continue to help more people. Seriously, on your app right now, just leave something. Ratings, reviews, whatever it happens to be. I thank you. All right, it's been fun. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. As always, make sure you're on that email list because it is the place to be. And let's wrap it up. It's been fun. Until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.